4, and I believe I am set to call this meeting to order. So we will call the meeting on the special meeting on the case disposition consistency workshop to or work group to order. The time is now 9:04. Ms. Pacman, if you wouldn't mind starting with the first agenda item while I'm still opening this up.
Certainly, I will call the roll and then I'll move on to the next item if we need to. So Dr. Davis Wilson.
Present.
And Mr. Diner.
Present.
And Ms. Shreve.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. And I do have the agenda open. So we can move to agenda item number 3, discussion consideration of possible action regarding election or appointment of a committee chair.
So Madam Chair, I have this on the agenda for purposes of deciding who is going to lead this effort. I know that you all have served as a chair in one capacity or another. You're all quite skilled in this area. So whoever is willing to take on this role, I know we'd be grateful for your leadership. I do think that this is a work group that you're not going to be meeting in perpetuity. You have a specific charge, and I think it will take just a few meetings, I think, to arrive at your at any recommendations you might bring to the board. So it's not a long-term assignment, if that's helpful.
All right.
I would like to nominate Dr. Wilson.
Yay, I'll second that one.
Perfect. I will accept that nomination. I'm happy to continue as the chair in this committee as well.
Excellent.
All right. And do we need to vote on that? Or are we good with just, okay, perfect. Then we can move to agenda item number 4, discussion consideration and possible action regarding defining the purpose, scope, and tasks of the committee. Ms. Pacanon.
Yes, Madam Chair. I thought maybe we should just sort of, because it's been 6 months since this was last discussed at a board meeting and the decision was made to form a work group to look at some strategies and some potential solutions or tools that the board can use to arrive at consistent outcomes for your case dispositions based on, to some degree, the facts of the cases and also which statutes have been violated. So I think just sort of setting that, establishing that understanding or establishing that purpose would be helpful, particularly for the record. And then it will, I think, sort of guide your efforts going forward.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yeah, Ms. Shreve.
I think you just pretty much summarized what we're trying to do. As I recall, we've had one meeting with Dr. Bohansky. You know, we started this and then that was like 6 months ago or so. But that's kind of, I think, what the focus was more just consistency in looking at how we look at the different cases. I think that's a great, I like how you just put it. Do we need to make a motion or something on that? Can we just all kind of agree, consensus, Ms. Galvin?
Yeah, if there's a consensus that that's the stated scope and purpose, then I think that that's fine. If anyone has any additions, they could add them now or edits.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Diner, I think you were the one that proposed this work group with Dr. Bohansky. Do you have any additional comments or anything to add to that?
Yes, I have a few, so thank you. So I think, I was looking at the materials that Ms. Pacanon circulated and with great interest, because I think there is a lot of value to be had in having a consistent way of deciding cases. So I'm looking at the Virginia model that was circulated, and it's based on a point system, essentially. You know, certain violations have up to 20 points or up to 30 points and so forth. And then there's a chart or a table that kind of tallies up all of the points and says, oh, if such and such complaint racks up 50 points, then these are the range of remedies that should be ordered by the court, ordered by the board, excuse me. So I think I mean that's a helpful way of looking at it. But at the same time, I mean, I'm also thinking of sort of the pros and cons of that approach. The cons being an analogy, for example, would be the sentencing guidelines at the federal level. It's the US sentencing guidelines. There's a range of sentences that federal judges can impose in criminal cases based on essentially, conceptually, a similar setup. It's a point system, and then depending on the points, you get 50 years in jail, et cetera. And that system has been heavily criticized for a number of reasons. One of the kind of main or relevant considerations for us as the board would be, how much is a system like this going to tie the hands of the board members in deciding individual cases? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is an important consideration, because ultimately, when we are sitting as a full board deciding these complaints, we are making individualized determinations. We are making assessments of the particular facts of the case and seeing what the particular statutory violations are. So that would be one of my biggest concerns, is we don't necessarily want to tie the hands of the board members if we adopt any sort of a rubric. So it's more of a cautionary principle I want us to keep in the back of our minds. The second point I would like to make is there's sort of a difference, at least in my mind, between what we call a stare decisis in courts. You know, when judges are asked to apply existing law to a new set of facts, they look to what the previous courts have done. And, you know, there are only a few ways in which you can depart from a previous determination. We might think of it as precedent, we might think of it as stare decisis in the court system. But my concern in regards to the board is in an administrative adjudication, it's not entirely clear that that we work with the same concepts in mind, because administrative stare decisis is very different than judicial stare decisis. Administrative precedents are very different than judicial precedents. And also, I mean, in terms of the makeup of the board and how, and the task of the board, the statutory duties that the board follows, they're very different than the statutory or constitutional duties that a judge follows in the judiciary. So given those kind of three important differences between how stare decisis and precedent works in the judicial system and how it works in the administrative system, I would want us to think of how we can craft a sort of a consistency matrix, if you will, that doesn't sort of first tie the hands of the board members, and second, create this sort of super precedent where we are now stuck with a matrix. And if we come up with a case that's either particularly egregious or particularly not the opposite, are we then stuck with a range of remedies that we as the board have to order in such situations? So we just need to be careful with that and keep that sort of second principle in mind. And the third point I would like to make is, as board members, we serve at the pleasure of the governor and the Senate, right? On the psychology board, we are confirmed by the Senate. And that role is very different institutionally than an Article 6 judge in Arizona, for example, because judges go through retention elections and they're answerable to the public, but we are even though we are tasked with keeping the public interest in mind and making decisions in the public interest, our hiring and firing authority lies not with the public, but with the Senate and with the governor. And with that in mind, any sort of decisions we make, I would think are necessarily belong to the executive branch of the government, not to the judicial branch of the government. Even if we are adjudicating cases, it's a different branch of government that we belong to, as the psychology board. So given that, you know, there are concerns that any matrix we adopt, is it going to be viewed as too political or too controversial from that angle, because we are viewed as political appointees working at the pleasure of the political branch, which is the executive, and the Senate, which is also a political branch. We aren't under a judicial branch. We aren't judicial officers. Even though we take an oath to uphold the Constitution, etc., we are still members of the executive branch. And that's kind of my third concern with adopting a matrix. Is any matrix, first of all, probably needs to go through some rulemaking. So I want us to think about that. And the second thing is, being members of the executive branch, how can we even bind the hands of a future board? I mean, all of us serve for terms, and, you know, 10 years down the line, when none of us are here, or maybe some of us are here, have we tied the hands of a future board with precedent and a matrix that it could be viewed as controversial? So those are kind of my three broad thoughts. Having said that, I think it is a very good idea to have some consistency, and let's talk about that. Let's think about that. So I guess that's my preliminaries. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Ms. Sharif?
I really like your points there, Mr. Diner. Question for you, because I think you're an attorney, right? Okay. So how do you balance, because we're political appointees, and then we make rulings or decisions on, you know, what happens to someone who has, you know, who has violated one of our statutes. But it at times can be taken to the court system because they fight it, they appeal it. And so then it turns into, we have to make sure that, you know, I think there's that balance, and then we have to make sure that what we did was based on statute. You know, I mean, we're political, but we're also got to make sure we can stand in court and say we did it the right way, right? So I guess there's, to me, that balance, and I do agree with you. I've been on the board for so long that I can't remember how long I've been on the board. I'm thinking 6 years, 7 years. And I have seen a little bit of a shift on, you know, on views and from the board members. And I think that sometimes that's good, but I think there's also a good discussion with those that have been here for a while, how we've done things in the past. And maybe we could somehow develop not an official matrix, because I agree with you, Mr. Dinar, that I don't want to tie anyone's hands. And there's a lot of, sometimes circumstances, there's a nuance to each case, even though they may have done the same thing, how it happened, are they remorseful? Was it blatant? Was it an accident? You know what I mean? That there needs to be a little bit of, you know, sometimes the boards can maybe look at it and say, okay, I see this a little different than this one. But maybe if we had some kind of can you have not an unofficial, but like a guideline that isn't a rule, that isn't that we're stuck with, but more of a guideline? Is that possible? I don't know. Is that
Madam Chair, if I may?
Yes, Mr. Renner.
Thank you. I agree. I mean, there's, to your first point, I would say, any kind of executive branch agency like the psychology board that makes any final decision, it could be via rulemaking, it could be via adjudication, could be reviewed by the judiciary. And there are specific standards that the judiciary applies in making those decisions, right? I mean, it's, mm-hmm. if we interpret the statute in a very bizarre way, then the judge can tell us, yeah, I mean, your interpretation was wrong. This is the interpretation, and go back and redo something. Or if we come up with a rule that's so bizarre that, you know, someone challenges that in court, the courts can always tell us, oh, you know, this is wrong. Here's the reason why. Undo it and do something else. So that's always going to be, you know, that's how the checks and balances work. I mean, if the legislature even, you know, enacts a statute, that can always be challenged as unconstitutional. And if a court says, yes, it is unconstitutional, then that statute just goes away, even if it stays on the books technically. So I guess, I mean, the reason I mentioned that checks and balances is we want to be careful in coming up with any sort of a matrix. And that sort of goes to your second point is, I like the idea of some kind of a guideline, keeping in mind that different board members might bring different perspectives, and over time, maybe as a board, the institution's views on the severity of certain punishments might change, might become more lenient, might become more stringent. I mean, it's totally up to the makeup of the board at a given point in time. So I think, I mean, in terms of guidelines, on when you go into the meeting materials for the board, there's, I think there's like a guidelines matrix, which is like a one-page document. I think it's guidelines for board complaint resolution.
Maybe it's a substantive policy statement.
Is it a substantive policy statement? So it's under, so I'm on the website right now, and it's, there is a section called Complaint Resolution Guidelines and Model Terms of Probation. So it's under the statutes and substantive policy statements.
All right, I'm pulling it up too right now.
I think that, Heidi, was developed a few years back in an attempt to get more consistency in the decisions that are rendered. There's different levels or different tiers of unprofessional conduct, and the board spent quite a bit of time deciding which type of unprofessional conduct would result in what type of discipline or non-disciplinary action. And it is just advisory. It is a guideline.
So, Ms. Calvin, where is that on the website? Is it under statutes and rules? What heading is it under?
So you have to log into the board member portal.
Oh, into the meeting?
Yeah.
Actually, it is a substantive policy statement that is on our website. So if you go to statute and rules and you click on that, you can scroll all the way down and you'll see it says guidelines for complaint resolution. I do not recall when this was implemented by the board. It was before Heidi and I started, so.
Well, I wonder how much of it's actually being used, if this is the first time. I mean, probably not the first time we've seen it, but if we're revisiting it now, I wonder if part of the issue is it not being readily accessed, which is a good point for this particular conversation, because if we do change something or create a different document, we would want to make sure that there's some sort of dissemination process. So as new board members join, or as we're making decisions, everybody's got that at the forefront of some of their decision-making.
Yeah. You know, Mr. Dinar, I think this is a great example of, and I, now that I'm seeing it, I somewhat remember this, but it's been a really good guideline. And maybe one of our discussions as a committee need to be to go over this again to remind us and to see if there's any, you know, any changes that people feel should be made to this guideline. But I think this is a good basis. And if we need to expand it, but I do think it's more should be a substantive policy as opposed to, like you said, Mr. Dinar, an actual rule or something we're stuck with, right, forever, as opposed to something that's a guideline. And I think this is a good start, if not something we want to continue.
Yes, I agree completely. And as Ms. Galvin was saying, since it's advisory, it doesn't, as when the full board decides a complaint, they don't have to follow it. They could deviate from it. And there aren't any, I mean, there would be a higher burden on the board to explain, let's say, a deviation from a rule. And it would be a lesser burden on the board to explain, or maybe not explain in certain situations, a deviation from a substantive policy statement. I agree that this should be the starting point, and maybe we should, you know, go line by line and see if there are any concerns that, you know, maybe Ms. Pakkanen has with some of the items in the kind of the three levels or the three tiers, the way it's set up. Let's discuss that.
I'm in agreement. Let's go, if it's okay with the chair, I think we go through this and see, use this as our foundation and see if we have any suggested changes or modifications or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's fine. I think just, I know it's a little bit different with the committee, but I wanna make sure that we're catching the essence of the agenda. It looks like we were in agreement that for agenda item number 4, Heidi's summary was sufficient. And now we're kind of moving to agenda item number 5, discussion, consideration, possible action concerning potential strategies to recommend to the board to arrive at consistent case disposition, as well as 6, because we're looking at the resources. But I just wanted to make sure that we acknowledge that we are on agenda item number 5. I'm in agreement with taking a look at that.
Madam Chair, may I offer some comments too? I do think that this resource is very useful. I think it can be sort of a foundation for potentially, it could be enhanced. It could look more like some of these other tools that the couple of tools I've identified. There could be others out there. So I'm willing to, you know, see what else might exist and do some more research for you. That's some foreshadowing, I guess, for a future agenda item. So I'm happy to be tasked with that. So I like the idea of building upon something that the board has already adopted, whether or not it's been that implemented or that useful. You know, I think that's something that we can address as a separate issue, but this doesn't go quite as far as some of the other tools that I've presented to you. So that's something, you know, to contemplate at any rate. And I haven't talked about a completely different strategy that I just want to explain. I think it's one, I know it's one that would require an enormous amount of effort, but it may be that that is the preferred strategy. What we don't have to inform us is a database that would tell us, you know, historically what, we have data on, you know, our violations and so forth, but we don't have a database that tells us, you know, with these facts, these violations and this this disciplinary action or this disposition. That's possible. We could build a database that looks like that as we transition to our new management system. That's something that, you know, someone could take the time to put all that data together. And then that could be our resource. That could be what we mine to tell us, you know, historically, cases of this nature, this is how, this is what we've arrived at. So I want to offer that for your consideration with the understanding, though, that it would take some time and some effort. I'm not daunted by that. I think that's good data to collect and be able to research. But it's something that I think needs to be carefully thought through. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess, Diana, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yeah, Ms.
I guess one question I think we need to decide on as a committee is, because Mr. Dinar made some really good points, and I mean, how detailed do you get in a database or in a guideline? So then you're so stuck with that. That, you know, okay, that's, you know, so here's what this person did. And gee, we put it in the database and it comes up that here's the violations and here's what we do to that person.
do we want something like that, that's detailed? Because at that point, then there's no wiggle room. I think then we're kind of stuck with precedents that's in a database, right? That, I mean, someone could go, well, this is what, or do we want something that's more general, what we have, maybe make it a little more specific, but allows the board to look at it as a individual board. I think Mr. Dinar made some good points. If it's too specific, if it's too detailed, we might be stuck with something we don't necessarily want to deal with. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Mr. Dinar? I mean, I guess I think we need to decide that before we decide what we're going to do. How detailed do we want of a matrix?
Mr. Dinar?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with you, Ms. Shreve. It's the more detailed we get, the more problematic I see the whole exercise to be. And not just from sort of a structural perspective or an institutional perspective or a legal perspective, but also from a practical perspective. I mean, I think creating a database like that ultimately what it will tell us is probably, hey, you know, in the past, in a majority of the cases, we have issued a letter of concern, let's say. And if right now, as a board, we are issuing, let's say, a disciplinary consent agreement, then that's too much. I mean, it could inform, or it could bring us as board members, it would probably help us evaluate what we are doing in the moment in the context of historically what has happened. But again, that has to be advisory. I mean, it can't be a mandatory kind of a range of remedies that we offer. So, I mean, I more detailed the database, I think the more problems we run into over the course of, you know, a number of years.
Right. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
You know, as coming on this, board, I think that, man, maybe it's the type A personality of me, but I do think that it would be in my head, and I understand what Mr. Dinar's and Ms. Shreve, what you guys are saying from, you know, the slippery slope and the potential concerns, but in my head, it would be nice to have answers to the question that's brought up often of, isn't there precedent set for this? What have we done with this in the past? And there's not a way to easily access that information. And I don't know if it'd be possible to have a way to compile that information without it being a decision-making tool, but then have the guideline tool that's used. Or if perhaps what, you know, Mr. Dinar is suggesting, if it doesn't really matter, so much so, because when the composition of the board kind of changes, some of that precedent setting, and not just the board, but when our government changes, when we're under new administration, when we're under new, and there's new statutory changes, does the precedent of what happened 6-7 years ago apply to the case today anyway? And I don't know. I just, you know, for me in my head, I think the ease of like having the answer to that question, which I think comes up every single time we're reviewing something, that would be nice. And I agree, you know, with Mr. Dinar, and that practically speaking, getting that information together would be very difficult and a lot of cumbersome work, and may actually not resolve any of the concerns, or may actually create a different issue or concern. Those are all good points. Ms. Shreve?
Because when I look at what we do, it's no different than what a human resource person does, right? You have an employee that's done something wrong. So you look at that employee and you go, okay, what rules or policies did they break? And you know, you try to make a decision based on the information and consistency, but everything is a little different. Everything's not the same. My concern is if we were to go to a detailed database, we don't agree amongst ourselves sometimes. You know, when we vote, that's why we vote, right? And majority rules. And so there's not always a consensus
on what should occur, even though a lot of us think that these are, you know, here's a precedence or here's a guideline. So I'd be worried about going too detailed because that takes away the free agency and thought of people on the board. And, you know, or could put it, they may not agree with, you know, what the database says or what, you know, the matrix says, given the, you know, nuances of the situation. So I'd rather see a general guideline, taking what we have, maybe broaden it a little bit, and maybe having a discussion amongst the group about, hey, let's be consistent. What are some ideas? But one thing I know is when we do have a discussion, typically we say, Ms. Galvin, you might, you know, we talk about what historically, generally what's happened, but history is history. And I'm not sure that's not the new committee. I've seen changes in the committee on how people, you know, the makeup of the committee. So I wouldn't want to go too detailed as much as maybe some general guidelines.
Well, Ms. Shreve, I wonder if part of the missing piece is the onboarding of new board members. If we had a guideline, if that could be something that is incorporated in the training of the new board members, because, and this is partially, you know, my own bias when I joined the board, but also, you know, seeing other new board members join, sometimes the rabbit hole that leads us down to why we would address something one way over another or what have you comes down to a newer board member not having those guidelines, I think. And I think that if that was something that had some training to, so it wasn't something that was just lost at the bottom of the substantive policies, but that was something that was like, hey, here's your orientation. And by the way, these are guidelines. They're not set in stone. They're not, but here's some examples of how it can be utilized. If perhaps that would streamline some of the conversations, doesn't necessarily, again, streamline the full decision-making, because you're right. Like we can choose at any point to say, yeah, no, the matrix does not apply on this particular space. And this is how we're going to articulate why it doesn't. But I think it's that training ahead of time, because I personally felt when I joined the board that there was about nearly 2 years of floundering of trying to figure out, like, what are the rules? What do I do? What, you know, what does happen with this case? And, you know, those sorts of things. So I wonder if it's also something that can be remediated in kind of front loading some of that training.
I think onboarding is really good. I do think that it's also a sense of experiencing it.
Yeah.
You know, and looking at my, you know, I represent the public. I'm not even an attorney, right? So I don't, even, you know, I have regulatory background, but I don't have, so it was, you know, understanding it. And I think too, the new people bring in a fresh look. So they also aren't, you know, I mean, somewhat it's a check and balance there, right? Those that have been there for a long time, those haven't. But I also kind of looked at, and, you know, gauge my own opinion based on what I'm hearing from everyone else. Because part of it, that's why you come in as an individual, you know, kind of like a jury kind of thing, right? You take the information, but you also look around at my peers that were, you know, and I learned a lot from them and asked questions after, but you can only onboard so much in the sense that we're not statutory people in that, you know, how do you balance that?
Mr. Diner.
Unless you're Mr. Dinar, who's an attorney, then you're more set story.
No, I was going to say, well, I agree with Dr. Wilson. I mean, there is some component of training involved in it. And I want to say, Ms. Pakkanen, between the three of us, I'm probably the junior most on the board in terms of the number of years I've served. Ms. Pakkanen did a very good job because the guidelines that are on the website were in the training package that was given to me. And I found that information very helpful because I realize, you know, over the course of many meetings, I've come to realize it's a helpful tool to have in front of me when I'm thinking of cases. And as Ms. Shreve, you're saying, yeah, I mean, everyone brings their individual opinions, personalities, what have you, to the board, and everyone is listening. Everyone is looking at the same materials in a case file. Everyone is hearing what's been said by people presenting. And based on that, they're forming an opinion and a judgment. And that is something to be celebrated. That's not something that should be hindered by any sort of a matrix that ties the hands, right? I mean, that I think all of us would agree on that. So I think, given what we have seen so far on the board, and obviously you guys have seen more than I have. I think, as a committee, we can evaluate the guidelines that are in front of us that are a substantive policy statement. And if we need to change that, amend it, let's talk about that. Let's see if, as Ms. Pakkanen suggested, if there is a better way of dealing with it. Like the Virginia model was sort of intriguing to me, the point-based system, but I also kind of realized the pitfalls with a point-based system. So if we have maybe, several examples of how different states have dealt with it. So Arizona has dealt with it, let's say, by having a substantive policy statement that's in front of us. Virginia has dealt with it by having some sort of a point system, as was part of our materials for this meeting. If there is, other options out there, it might be of value for us as a committee to think of what are some of the ways in which boards have dealt with it. And then based on that, see if we, first of all, need to revise the guidelines we have in Arizona. And second, if we conclude that we do need to revise them, then let's talk about ways in which we can revise them.
Madam Chair, can I also add to this conversation? I think that it would also be helpful to gather some information from boards who have implemented perhaps both tools. I would love to hear the Virginia experience. I don't know how long they've used their tool, but I'd really like to know that. And then with respect to the FSBBT developed tool, obviously that is in use. It's an optional tool for use by their member boards, by PT boards. I could get that information as well to find out if they've had, those boards have had a good experience. And what they've learned from using them, and have there been any unintended consequences too from the use of these tools? So I'm happy to collect that information as well.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Daner.
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful. And also, I was looking at the, and thank you for mentioning the second the FS. I'm bad with acronyms, so pardon me. So whatever the FS, whatever tool was. And one of the thoughts before I forget when I saw that was not all of those remedies are something that the psychology board in Arizona can give. So even if that's in front of us, I just wanted for the record that some of the things on that list, we just can't order people to do because of the way our statutes are written. So when you're gathering these tools, and when we look at them, that's something to keep in mind. They are going to depend on the individual statutes in those states, and ultimately we have to, come up with. We can adopt something very similar to what one of these tools, or we can combine a few of those tools and come up with something, keeping in mind that we still have our statutes in front of us.
Sure. And Madam Chair, I will acknowledge too, I didn't staff the committee, the FSBBT committee that developed the tool that I've shared with you. I was sort of ancillary staff to that committee and wasn't involved in this, but sort of, observed its development, along the periphery, if you will. And it's complex. I think it's more difficult to understand and to apply. So I do think that is, that's somewhat of a concern that I have.
I like, Madam Chair, I like the idea of, Mr. Diner mentioned, of let's look at, see what other states are doing that's not complicated or a detailed database, but that are general guidelines that maybe we could then take and, strengthen what we have and use that as a, gather some different ideas.
I agree with that. So Ms. Pacadon, is that something you and your staff can continue to do, gather some of the research or research some of the other states?
Yes, Madam Chair. Let's sort of think about this from a timing perspective. I would love to do this research. I would also love to task a student intern with this research because I think that would be a really great experience for, you know, someone to, you know, to learn and, you know, apply and do some critical thinking around it and so forth. We won't have an intern here until the fall semester. Jennifer told me I couldn't have one this summer because we had too much going on. So we kind of have to push that off into the future. So I'll take the reins and see how far this progresses. And it may be that, you know, my ideal approach to have a student involved just isn't practical because, you know, we don't want to delay. So that's sort of what I'm trying to process in my mind.
I think that that sounds good. Ms. Shreve?
I was gonna say, you know, I think do the best you can. I know you guys got a lot going on. The summer is kind of low, you know, low, not a lot going on as far as, you know, even the board at this point. And so if we need to wait to the fall, I'm not heartache over it. I do think though that the substance policy statement is a good tool to remind everybody we have at this point. Because I don't think a lot of people have, you know, maybe have looked at it for a while, including myself. You know, I think that was a nice find by Mr. Dinart to remind us all about it. So it might be something we want to just include in the packet. I'll remind everybody we have.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I could, in my executive director's report, I could address this. I should, you know, tell the full board, you know, some of these other, you know, efforts that are currently underway, the school psychologist licensure exemption committee, for which we desperately need an acronym, that group has been doing some work. And so it would be really nice to sort of, you know, do a brief update on what they've been doing in this group. So why don't I address it that way and make sure that the report then links back to this tool. And Mr. Dinart, I'll confess when I'm glad that that you received that when you know, you completed your orientation with me. I had all of 3 weeks of tenure ahead of you. So, but fortunately, my predecessor's predecessor had a nice binder of materials that she had assembled, and so that was a sort of a basis for me to build on. So I'm really glad that somehow that got shared with you. So
excellent. So it sounds like we have some work to do before we can discuss full strategies or any recommendations for the board. I'm with Ms. Shreve. Like, I know that we don't want to delay it, but I also don't think that it's as big of a hurry as you know, some other priorities might be. And so if we can continue to move and review, and honestly, even if it's done for me, it done in chunks to where we can meet again in the, you know, in a couple of months with some of that material so that we're not having to, you know, review if, you know, 30 different states' policies and procedures on that, I would be okay with that as well. Do we have an idea of how often we want to meet?
I would suggest we meet when we have more material to look at. I don't like to make a meeting just to have a meeting, although I love seeing you guys. Great, nice always to see you. But maybe Ms. Pacadon, when you feel you have enough material, you know, in a couple months, then let us know. I mean, does that work with everybody? I just don't want to put a deadline when we don't know what's, you know, what it is. So maybe, like you say, like 2 or 3 months, or let's just let us know where we're at in 2 months.
Yeah, I think initially like 2 months, you know, maybe if we can have a ballpark, let's try to meet 9 weeks out or something and then kind of work towards that deadline. At least for me, like deadlines always help because I have like a goal in mind. So yeah, 2-3 months works.
I would agree. I was thinking about 2 months, and I agree. I don't think it has to be set in stone. But I work the same way. Otherwise, all of a sudden a year will go by and I'll be like, oh crap, weren't we supposed to be meeting? So I know that board staff is very good about staying on top of all of that. But in my own head, I'm like Mr. Dinar, having that goal or that, you know, estimated benchmark is helpful. All right. I've got then, and we've already covered it, but I'll go ahead and say, see if there's any additional items for agenda item number 6, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding resource literature and other information to inform the work of the committee. So, any additional comments to this? I think we covered that item as well. We have covered number 7, schedule future meetings of the committee. We have a, you know, benchmark of maybe 2-ish months, but definitely just based on how resources have become available. Any additional meeting topics for future meetings? All right, hearing none. I think it's a good start.
Yeah.
All right, agenda item number 9, adjournment.
So moved.
Seconded.
All in favor, please indicate so by saying aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the meeting's adjourned and the little one is.
Oh, look how.